This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. I'm Lee Chui-Lin. A new study by psychologists from the University of Michigan suggests that people with mentally demanding jobs are more likely to have better memories before retirement and less likely to suffer from memory loss after retiring. Here with us to explain the study and how memory works, after a slight delay, is psychologist and cognitive neuroscience expert Dr. Jessica Price, as well as Wei Lin Po, a PhD student in attention, memory and language. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Sorry, Rebecca. Bit late.
No,
ironic,
worries.
We're talking about stress and demandful jobs. It's a little bit stressful getting here on time.
With that, you know, that's a pretty good lead into my first question. Mm-hmm. What is defined as a mentally challenging job?
That's quite difficult because it can be a number of different things. So it's not something, being a taxi driver, that can also be seen as mentally demanding. So there's a study, ironically, I can't remember by who, but they looked at London taxi drivers, their spatial skills, and based on kind of formal standard tests of intelligence, they scored quite low. But when it took measuring their spatial memory, they're actually a lot more better. So when it comes to mentally demanding, it kind of depends what type of job that you're doing. So all jobs can be seen as mentally demanding, but some might be more so than others.
And having shown a correlation, the study's author gave two theories on why mentally challenging jobs increase brain capability in later life. Could you tell us about those two theories and which one you find more persuasive?
Well, one of them is the use it or lose it theory, the idea of if you don't keep mentally active, then that can have an impact on performance in later life. But there's also the one that looks more at by keeping yourself more mentally active, that can also help stave off any problems with increased age. Because as we do get older, we do have deficits in certain areas, but not others. For me, the idea is that you don't use it or lose it, is that you just actually, the neural networks might become slightly more weakened. So the idea of being more mentally active strengthens the connections within the brain. So I would go less for the use it or lose it and more the fact of keeping yourself mentally active can help strengthen the neural networks. So it means it can stave off kind of pathological changes within the brain.
I want to talk briefly about the idea of brain plasticity, which mm-hmm. is a term that comes up every time we talk about memory, mm-hmm. Every time we talk about neurons and neural networks. What exactly is brain plasticity and how is it affected by how we use our brains?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you have someone who has suffers from a stroke or has suffered from some form of head injury, there's a degree of reorganization within the brain to cope with problems that they do face. So there is a degree of the neural network slightly shifting to kind of compensate for problems that there are. So neuroplasticity is mainly kind of to do with differences in the network of slightly having more areas being slightly more active to kind of offset any difficulties. So there's a lot of research, particularly by Capel, Grady, that's looked at the fact using PET studies and MRI, if they compare young versus older adults, they actually show a high degree of overactivation compared to younger adults. They actually use more of their brain. So they show bilateral activation in tasks that measure kind of episodic memory, whereas younger adults are more likely to show only unilateral activation. So it's the idea of that your brain can change with age.
What does unilateral activation mean in this case?
Unilateral, so if you're given a task of, if I were to give you a letter beginning with S, can you name me a word beginning with S?
Right, like snake.
So they have tests like that, and with younger adults, they'd more like show activation in their left hemisphere, whereas with older adults, they'd show activation in their left and right hemisphere. So they'd incorporate more of the brain regions.
Meaning, if I'm an older adult, what I may be experiencing is not just the naming of the thing, but also all the different connections that it's mm-hmm. formed within my brain
yeah.
of memories with snakes and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. So how does memory work?
Memory has... So there's three different types of memory. So there's like the working memory, the short-term memory, and the long-term memory. So what happens is that when we see things around us, it kind of goes into our sensory memory first. But then again, it's a very short period of time, and your attention can only focus to a few things. So other things it focuses on, and other things just get filtered out. And these things that you focus on, it goes into your working memory. And if you kind of looked at it more, you kind of process them, it would then kind of shift into long-term memory, that kind of thing. And it goes in there, stays there for a long term. And that's kind of like build up your database of knowledge there.
And then what happens when we forget? Because, of course, I think we mm-hmm. only really think about our memory when it's failed us. That tends to be the time uh-huh. where it's most crucial. So, you know, if this were a smooth process, we wouldn't be having this conversation. You know, mm-hmm. if everything got stored into my long-term memory and I could pull it up anytime I wanted, mm-hmm. Nobody would ever be fussed. But the fact that we can't is the reason why people tend to be worried about their memories. Mm-hmm. So what's what's the hitch in the process?
Well, like you said before, everything is stored in your long-term memory, but the trick is into knowing how to extract all these your information from your long-term memory, which is what we have, the working memory there. And so I guess attention comes in as well to like focus which area it should be, so it doesn't kind of get lost and kind of get haywired there.
So it's the type of kind of cue that you use. Mm-hmm. So if you were to ask someone... present an image, say, of a curry puff, they'll be able to recognise it, so that would be their long-term semantic memory. But if you ask them, when was the first time you ever had a curry puff, that might take them a lot longer, just because that's a specific event in time. And that type of memory, looking at episodic memory, is something that's more affected by age compared to semantic memory. So if you see an image of a curry puff, you can think of all the different kind of memories attached to it, what it tastes like, whereas episodic memory, trying to remember exactly when you first had one would be a lot difficult, simply just because there's so many different, maybe different instances of having it. So it's more kind of retrieval, what cue you use to actually boost your memory.
And both of those, I guess, are different from the kind of memory needed to remember where you left your car keys, for example. Mm-hmm. Would that be right?
Yeah, I would say so. And just to add on to what she just said, there's also a type of memory, it's called procedural memory, which is basically kind of knowing and remember how to ride your bike, how to drive a car. So like, these things are all like skill-based. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
And all that's just mixed up in our head, more or less. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, before we get down to the whole theory of a mentally challenging job, you know, enhancing our memory, challenging jobs are often stressful. What are the effects of stress on our memory?
It depends on the type of memories you're trying to retrieve. Mm-hmm. So if it's more just kind of everyday retrieval, more neutral events, stress can actually block the retrieval process. So it can actually disrupt our ability to encode new information and then retrieve it later. But if it's for emotional type events, we're actually, after a delay, we're actually a lot better with, and we're a lot worse with more neutral events. So actually kind of, if it's a kind of an event that evokes strong emotion, you might be initially a little bit poor at recalling it, but later, after delay, after a period of kind of consolidation, we're a lot better. So it's two different ways stress can affect us. If it's for kind of neutral events, it can block our retrieval, but if it's more emotional events, we can actually be a lot better.
And when it comes to professional stress, I think that can often be quite different from, you know, purely emotional stress, because professional stress can be a daily occurrence. You know, precisely. It can be an endless piling on or a feeling of, I guess, you know, we come back to the phrase rat race. It's there for a reason. So that kind of stress where it's just daily increments of stress, how would that affect our memory, if at all? Or how would it affect the way we do our job, the way we conduct ourselves?
I think one way, it's because like right now, jobs are pretty stressful and we have to multitask. You know, we're always on, especially if you're working in media, you have to focus on what's on Facebook, what's on Twitter and all that. So it's always shifting our attention from like one to the other. And it can have like short-term benefits because when you're stressful, your senses get really heightened up. It's like the flight or fight theory. So in the short term, you can do a lot of work done. You can focus your attention to so many things. But in the long run, it really just tires you out.
So it's also not healthy.
That's kind of like more from my perception, because I'm doing studies in attention.
I would have to agree. Another common feature of a strenuous job is sleep deprivation. What is the relationship between sleep and memory?
Well, there is one thing with sleep, it does help you consolidate memories throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a lot of research that's suggesting people with sleep deprivation, they show deficits, not just in memory, but in other areas. So it can also affect people's mood, make them more irritable. And I guess all my third year students know all too well when I'm sleep deprived. So shout out to UNMC psych students. So they can always tell when I'm tired. So, and that can impact on your ability not also to encode new information. So if people are asking you questions and you've not had much sleep, it can be quite difficult to understand kind of what people are trying to ask you if you think, sleep and memory can, lack of sleep can really impact on your memory performance.
And then I suppose that retrieval, the process of retrieval can also get interrupted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And it's not just the retrieval process as well. It's like if you get really, really tired, you can't perform well, especially in driving, because, you know, your sensory memory just gets really lowered down. And you can't really see things clearly as you're driving or doing something else. So just a comment on that.
Before we proceed, I do want to ask, is there, you know, what does it mean to say that somebody's memory is better than the next person? Because, of course, you know, there are some people who pride themselves on their memories, saying, for example, people who claim to have a photographic memory. And then there are others who readily confess to having very little, what feels like very little memory at all. They can't remember stories from, you know, 2 weeks ago, so on and so forth. What distinguishes a person with a good memory from a person with a bad memory? You know, are we all born with the same amount and then it just depends how we work it out? Or, you know, what is it?
Oh, you're speaking to someone who does have a terrible memory. But I think my memory, particularly the area I find difficult, is prospective memory, so doing things in the future. So I'm terrible for not writing to-do lists. So when I suddenly get asked to do something that I should have done, I'm like, ooh, I forgot about that. So for me, my prospective memory is quite bad, but I have, in some cases, quite good episodic and semantic memory. So it's very kind of individual differences when it comes to, some people have, I think it's a case by Luria, who had a subject who actually had really good memory, so he could remember formulas 10 years down the line, but they actually, their problem is that they couldn't remove those memories. So they actually had difficulty because they had all that information crammed in their brain. So some people, they might say, oh, my memory's really bad. But if you test them on a standard memory test and compare it with someone who say they have a good memory, they might actually be not that much different. So it also depends. It's what's known as meta memory. So rating how good your memory is can affect how your memory performance is, ironically enough.
Okay.
Yeah, and it also depends on how you use your attention to like focus on the pieces of information so it can encode better in your long-term memory as well.
Which is why some people have, for example, a better memory for faces and so on, because they're paying close attention at that point in time. Okay, the reason why I wanted to establish that is because, you know, when we say that a more mentally demanding job affects your memory positively, do we know which kind of memory it's affecting in this case, or is it sort of an overall raising of standards as such?
A lot of the research that has focused on kind of mentally engaging work focuses more on episodic memory. So semantic memory is not so touched as much because there's a kind of difference between two different types of intelligence. So you have your crystallized intelligence, which is something that with age doesn't really change that much. Whereas what does show age-related changes is more fluid abilities. So that's just looking at general cognitive processes like attention, like memory, like inhibition. So for those ones, they show more kind of variance with age. So it's kind of hard. A lot of study tests more focused on episodic memory. So for other types of memory, I'm not so sure about whether mentally engaging, mentally stressful work, is it across all domains or is it just episodic memory? I'm not sure.
And episodic memory here means the ability to remember when you got married or your husband's name, so on and so forth. Okay. What causes memory loss?
Ooh, so many answers to that question. For memory loss, it could be through kind of catastrophic memory loss, could be through head injury. It could be through neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's disease, vascular dementia. With older age, depression can also play a role. For just general kind of everyday memory losses, it could be just the passage of time for when you've looked at something. Another one is you're kind of blocked from remembering something, so not using good memory cues, something misattributing things. So they did a kind of classical study where they got people to study names, so it's known as the false famous name paradigm, and tested them the next day and rated them on how famous people were. And from the names that they'd seen before, they rated them a lot more famous, even though they were just random names that they'd kind of picked out.
Right.
So there's things that there's various ways that we can actually trick our memory as well. So memory is quite a multifaceted domain.
Yeah. Well, from a more like a cognitive technique point of view, is that when you try to encode like information into your memory, when there's an interruption that kind of goes on in this process, it can also impairs like memory from being stored correctly. For example, if you see one thing, you might actually think of it as like you remembered it the other way, that kind of thing. So this is what I'm currently studying as well in my research. So it's a bit... It's quite interesting.
It is, yeah. And I guess that's also why, you know, sometimes you see something, you store it away to tell somebody, but if in the process your attention gets diverted, that can cause incorrect storage, I suppose.
Yes.
Okay. I'm speaking today to Dr. Jessica Price, cognitive neuroscience expert, as well as Weilin Po, PhD student in attention, memory and language. We're discussing how your job affects your memory as well as memory overall, you know, keeping it active. And we'll be right back after Amirul Ruslan with Market Updates, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to the show. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me today, Dr. Jessica Price, cognitive neuroscience expert, and Weilin Po, PhD student in attention, memory, and language. We're discussing how your job affects your memory, a topic close to many here at BFM who may feel that the longer we're here, the less our memory works. So, you know, with that, is memory loss and mental functioning decline a normal process of aging? Because I think, you know, this happens a lot. We speak to people who are older, say, in their 70s. And one of the very first things we say is they're still sharp. You know, that's one of the first things we notice. And is that something, are they special in that sense? Or, you know, can we all stay sharp into our old age?
Well, there's a theory what's known as cognitive reserve, which means that for some older adults as they age, they're still quite high functioning, so they actually don't differ much from younger adults. So it is a case that as we age, we do have more difficulty. We're a bit slower when it comes to doing certain things, but that's also to do with physical changes in the body. It's not actually to do with mental changes within the brain. So there is some kind of common deficits associated with age. So our episodic memory can get a bit worse, but other areas actually remain relatively preserved. So if you give people, older adults, say, give me a list of words beginning with list letter, there's not much difference from younger adults. So their semantic memory is quite good. I guess with your test of attention, they might show...
Oh, yeah. So kind of the study that I read recently about internal attention among like bilinguals, older bilinguals and younger bilinguals. So apparently, if you give an older bilingual like a passage of sentences with like mixed languages in it, the older bilinguals are more likely to like... they'll be better at picking up words, and they'll be better like kind of strategizing their attention to kind of pick up what the information is. Whereas for younger bilinguals, they tend to like go around all over the place. So I guess it's you know, age will give you some experience in knowing how to strategize as well. So I guess that's what kind of contributes to like, you're being sharp.
Right.
I think also with reading things like that, that's relatively unaffected. And one of the benefits of living in a country in Malaysia of being bilingual and multilingual, that actually puts you in good stead in the aging process. There's a lot of research that have shown that being bilingual can help delay the onset of dementia. So here, the fact you can get people speaking three different languages in one sentence is quite good. So for me, who's a monolingual, I'm less well off compared to Weilin, who is multilingual.
Another question that tends to come up an awful lot is, at what age does our cognitive ability begin to deteriorate or degenerate? Because I think we all like that magic number of, you know, your brain stops growing when you're, what is it, 25 or something like
that.
And everything after that is just, you know, downhill, which for everyone over 25 is just awful news.
Well, it's more kind of 30-ish. So,
oh, good.
Yeah. But it's not that it kind of deteriorates rapidly. It might just be a slightly slower pace. It's when we get to the more extreme ends of older older age, then we might show a lot more deficits compared to younger adults. So it's not, the aging process doesn't happen overnight. It's something that is a gradual process. But in cases, in extreme cases, when someone has dementia, then their cognitive abilities decline a lot more rapidly compared to a normal, healthy older adult.
Is memory loss something that's treatable or reversible? I mean, the study was looking at the idea that if you have a demanding job, then your memory would be better. But that doesn't mean that you cure it. It just means that you end up better. But for somebody who is perhaps in the beginning stages of getting a little fuzzy, is it something that's reversible?
It's a bit of a difficult question because some people do get a lot quite worried about the changes in their own behaviour because, of course, the best person to know about your own memory is yourself.
Unless you forget.
Unless you forget, of course. but there's things that's known as reversible dementias, that maybe people are having periods of confusion and there's actually an underlying medical problem. So it could be a vitamin B12 deficiency. It could be they're actually suffering from depression. It could be that medications they're taking for kind of blood pressure, that type of thing, can also make memory performance worse. People with type 2 diabetes, it's kind of been sort of argued that can accelerate the aging process. So this is just when there's actual an underlying medical condition. When it comes to kind of normal healthy aging, it's just the idea of keeping active. There's nothing really medication-wise that you can take, but it's more kind of keeping yourself mentally active, having an active social life, doing physical exercise, having a good diet, not eating, that's a rubbish idea, but a healthy diet. So not eating really fatty foods, smoking, drinking, that type of thing. Ooh, and coffee. Coffee consumption is actually good for keeping you active. So every time people come into my office, I have a coffee machine on the go permanently, and now my students taking my third year class are convinced that's why.
That worried me for a second. I thought you were about to say no fatty foods, you know, no alcohol, no smoking, and no coffee, in which case
no,
many people...
I wouldn't, no coffee. That would be hell.
So besides getting a mentally challenging job, you know, you mentioned staying active. What does that entail? Because I guess many people, what they want is methods, right? Like the idea of, oh, I just need to remember a card a day of a deck, and that will keep me mentally active, or all these little tricks that we do. But is it that, you know, would that work? Are there games, are there things like little tricks that would work?
I know there's a lot of research that's looking at playing chess, Sudoku, but even actually just going down to the local Coptiam and having a coffee with your friend, having that social interaction can also help keep you mentally active. So it's not just kind of games that you can play, but also having that social link, picking up a new hobby. There's, I don't know if they have... Here, I know in where I'm from in Scotland, we have kind of what's known as University of the Third Age. So this is where people go along to evening classes. I think my mum's learning German at the moment. Shows that even as you get older, you can still teach an old dog new tricks. So there is hope for me yet to pick up some Bahasa.
The other thing that people talk about, Sudoku and crossword puzzles, do they activate the parts of the brain associated with memory?
I think maybe not so much. Well, the crosswords would be memory, but for Sudoku, that would be more kind of your kind of mental arithmetic. It would be more logic. So it's kind of, that is an aspect of memory, but it's not necessarily tapping straight into memory.
Yeah, I think it's more tapping to like your fluid intelligence, like making more reasonings and logical equations and things like that.
And a part of keeping the brain active.
Yeah.
Right. How does physical exercise impact our memory?
Just being generally physically healthy helps you across kind of multiple domains. So it's not just memory, it is actually attention, inhibition. Yeah.
And it does boost up your mood as well. So, like, if you're, you know, sitting at a desk doing, like, work, you get habituated with what you're doing. So just, you know, getting up and doing some exercise just, like, helps you take a break from that. So it's very general advice.
With news and studies like this, you know, talking about mentally challenging jobs and so on, might we see more of the elderly returning to professional positions within the workforce? Is this something that we should encourage?
Well, I think definitely we are an ageing population. So actually, I think the age of retirement will actually become a lot later. And I think also we kind of neglect the fact that with older adults, they actually have a wealth of experience. So getting them involved in kind of children's groups, that type of thing, talking about how Malaysia has changed. So talking about their kind of cultural history. So they have a lot to add to that, to the workforce. So I think definitely there will be maybe more of a case of people staying kind of more active in the workforce a lot later. And that's something that's going to happen across the world.
Yeah. Moving on to something a little bit left field. Do you envision a future where intelligence drugs could compensate for cognitive decline?
I would lay off drugging people. Yeah. So for me, I wouldn't necessarily intelligence drugs. It would be more medication if they actually have a disease.
Dementia.
So if it, for dementia, then I would definitely recommend medication. But for a healthy adult, you don't really want to add extra chemicals to your body because it can give you side effects that can upset your stomach. So really, I'm kind of more of a, if you're healthy, you don't need to take a medication, don't take it. So for me, that's my own personal opinion.
Yeah, well, you can always do something else different. Like, for example, learning a new language or learning how to dance, because that's like tapping into different areas of your brain. So you learn all these skills and you can actually apply them to your real life as well, like different... So yeah, that would be much better than taking a drug.
On that note, some research also shows that cognitive decline accelerates when the brain is unstimulated, which is something I think, you know, we've covered in brief in other parts of this interview. Is boredom harmful to our mental well-being?
Is what?
Boredom.
Oh, okay. Well, I think boredom is mainly because of your, like, your sensories get habituated. Can't say that word right today. But yeah, because you keep getting exposed to that same thing all over and again. And at one point, your attention kind of wants to seek novel information as well. So I guess that can kind of contribute to, like, boredom. So yes.
And, you know, Dr. Price, you were talking earlier about your mom. And lifelong learning is cited as one way to remain mentally active and prevent the onset of dementia. But does aging hinder our ability to learn?
No.
Oh, that's very good news.
Very simple answer is that you can still learn. It may be taking you a longer time to pick something up. My mum's ability to use Facebook was initially very interesting, so she kept posting to her own wall, but then we kind of taught her how actually to use Facebook properly. And
I think anybody who's, you know, taught their parents how to use a computer or, you know, just a mouse, I think, has experience with that.
I'm going to get into so much trouble if I use this.
But basically, no, it might take longer, but the ability to learn is unaffected.
Yep. So we can still learn. So there's still hope for me.
And finally, for those who've just entered the workforce, as well as those nearing retirement, what's your message to people who want to keep their minds sharp after they retire?
Not suddenly stopping everything.
Yeah.
So I think people who are in a quite demanding job, suddenly having to stop the work can actually be a really big problem. So kind of gradually working out what kind of things they can do to keep active. So for my own research, when I was doing my PhD, I was looking with healthy older adults. It was actually quite difficult to fit me in their schedule because they'd be going on holiday, they were going to be playing bingo, they were going to be looking after their grandkids. So they were very active doing a number of activities. So having a schedule, eating healthily, moving around, doing exercise, that can kind of help.
Yeah. And maintaining social connections, I guess.
Definitely.
Which brings me to the next point, because you don't want to move from, like, daily routines of working every day to one day you just stop and not interacting with anyone, because that will just lead to loneliness and it also leads to, like, depression as well, and that's why it kind of affects your mood and kind of affects your memory and your well-being as a whole person. Yeah.
Thank you very much, ladies. I've been speaking to Dr. Jessica Price, cognitive neuroscience expert, as well as Wei-Lin Po, PhD student in attention, memory and language. We've been discussing whether having a mentally demanding job could affect your memory on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.